it's time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Last Saturday, Sharon Brown talked to Di Stoddard from Waiheke Library, Alan Wilson from the Waiheke Fishing and Recreation Club, and she talked to Toby King-Turner about everything from water to mining.
Good morning, so we've got Di here. Great. So Stephen hasn't come in from the police station, but we've got Di, and she's going to be talking about books and various things like the library upgrade. Hi, Di, how are you doing?
Good morning, Sharon, how are you?
Yeah, good. Okay. Yeah, so tell us, what's happening this month at the library?
Well, it feels, it's really busy. We've had the holiday program, it's school holidays, so that's just finishing today and hopefully slowing down. It's so busy in that library, honestly, it's just... We keep talking about it, and I've been there 5 years, and it just seems to get more and more busy, which of course is good.
Is that because you've got more sort of holiday program events? It seems to be much more structured than it used to be, so kids are really sort of looking forward to what goes on in the holidays?
Yeah, I think it's just the same, but we are promoting it better, I think. And it is free, you know, like lots of families need free things to come to, and I think that's really special that we offer that free bit, because otherwise the other things in the holidays do tend to cost money. So we all complement each other, and we have a good core group that come through the library to our program as well, so that's busy. But of course, having the wireless there and the laptop people and the free internet, we haven't got enough plugs actually, but it's all good, but we kind of get a bit crowded sometimes.
So does that mean people could actually just sit out the front with their laptops?
They can, because our wireless perimeter is quite big, so they can sit outside 24/7 if they want to.
And you don't mind people doing that?
No. If they want to come out into the courtyard and use their laptop, they're most welcome. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I was down at Palm Beach yesterday, and we were three mothers. It's the school holidays, and we were all stressing to the max because we had work to do, and it all involved computers. And instead, we were sitting there for like 2 hours watching our children on the playground. And I just thought what they needed was a little like Wi-Fi station or a little plug-in, and then you could have these three women lined up on the picnic table, all with their laptops, busily getting on with it, because the kids don't need attention, they just need a parent to be there. But they don't actually, just throw them a biscuit every now and again, and they take off again for another half an hour,
because the beach and the playground, it's they can plenty occupy themselves.
That's right,
and together as a group. So that's been busy. And of course now with the with the library upgrade, of course it feels like it's amped up a bit even more, so there's a lot of conversation going on. And the team's been over from town Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday this morning. You're most welcome to go along and talk to them at the market, Market, between 10 and 12.
And so what is the team?
It's the Auckland City Council project manager. It's a rep from the architects firm, and another city council representative as well. And probably that group changes a bit, like who actually comes along, but that's the fundamental makeup of that group. And so people are, as with their libraries are very precious, so there's a lot of strongly opinionated people, and people... there's quite a lot of emotion around. And so
I think for me at this point, I'm actually getting a little bit confused, because I can't remember, it seems to me that it keeps changing, but maybe that's an illusion. And it was also that with this particular library, people specifically said that they wanted them in separate places. The library here,
that was some of the feedback.
And the service station in Ostend. And then, so what is the current status? Where are we at now with the library?
Well, it is next door here at the church and the manse, and both those buildings will be removed, and it is the library and the service centre together, and the library will be closer to the artworks area and the service centre's more towards Oneroa, and that site will be, that's the new site.
So there's been some discussion, which maybe you know about or maybe not, but that this area will be knocked down, or
the radio station,
the Waste Resource Trust, Tanya Batt's little corner in the artworks office.
That's right.
Artworks Theatre? I'm not sure.
That stays.
Artworks Theatre stays.
Just these little offices along here where you are.
Right.
They all come down. So
but the cinema's okay? The cinema will be safe?
Yes.
And this building here, the current library?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the gallery's fine too.
Right.
Yeah, and Air Jazz will still be there.
Okay.
So it's really just this little lot along where you are.
Right.
And so they are aiming for construction to start January 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a year-long process, and, you know, that's the timeline they've set now. So there is a lot of... Because it is kind of... There are strong opinions around in the community. We are strongly encouraging people to fill out the form. And that form will be at the market this morning. The team's available to talk to. You can come into the library and get the form. So it's called the Waiheke Community Library and Service Centre Development. Tell us what you think. So all the information's in there, and there's some tick boxes, things to fill in and rip off and post.
So what kinds of things should we be telling you what we think? Because, you know, essentially a lot of people have been saying what they think, and I think there's a little bit of a feeling that it's not going through. So what part of the process at this stage do you think we can affect?
Yeah. Well, I think people just need to be clear about what they would like to see the library be.
You know, is it a book
library? Like, is it a book library for you? If you've got children, do you feel like the children's area might need to have more space? Because, you know, we can have 50 people in our little area. Teens, what do they need in there? I mean, they don't really have a space now. They've got a few books on walls. But so it is really the functionality of the library space, space for study, space for computers, space for a quiet read of the newspaper, just the day-to-day running of a library, really.
Lovely.
And what you'd like to see in that. And there is a concept design, which is what you're supposed to be commenting on at this point, and a sense of maybe how you feel what you require a library to be and how that will fit into what you see the concept plan providing at the moment.
And as a librarian, what do you see as the main uses of the library? Where do people use the library
the most? We have customer satisfaction surveys done every year, and it was very, very clear from the results. Auckland City Libraries employs a company to do that, and the results are really clear that 80% of our community in Waiheke, for sure, 80% of our users see it. Still, you can't get away from the fact that they see the library as a book library. And no matter, you know, we've got the e-books and we've got reading on iPads and we've got audio books, but I don't think that will ever change. You know, we want more books, more space for books, more manoeuvrability around the shelves, because at the moment, you know, our little trolleys when we're shelving, it's like a bit like a racetrack, and it's only one way, really. So, so you can't get away from that, and that's the bottom line, really.
Is that particular to Waiheke Library, that we're in a kind of a residential area, rather than a student area, or do you think that's libraries generally, that most people still see them as a place where you go along the shelf and you find a book that you like and you read it?
Yeah, I do a little bit of reading online through library journals from overseas. I kind of sign up for their e-newsletters. It is a fundamental usage of libraries still around the world. It's still that's the trend. It's still a book library. And there's that whole social connection that people have going to a library. I don't think you can pass that either. You know, it's always going to be there. And, of course, the publication percentages of e-books and thus is rising, you know, like hugely. But I don't think it will ever take over the book, you know. You can't beat that. And that's especially for families and children and, well, everybody, actually. Yeah. From that, you know, from the survey, it's kind of like, you know, okay, so we still actually just want an ordinary day library, really, you know, in a nice building and purpose-built, and, you know, that has all the functions that we require on every part of our day, working there, receiving books, issuing books, helping people, having enough of a workspace out the back, etc. That's what it still needs to be.
And how will this new library be different? What are the improvements in terms of space?
That's what we don't know, and this is the feedback now. You know, if people do want to share what they would like to see their local library to be, then this is the opportunity for them now to really say what they'd like.
Is it significantly bigger? Well, we don't
know. It is. Yeah. It is significantly better. Originally, it was going to be bigger, but then with the recession and the joining of the service centre down this end as well with us, it has decreased, but it still will be bigger. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard, you know, square metres don't mean a lot, but in terms of the space that there's there, are we saying it's half as much again, twice as big?
No, I understand it's going to be, I think it's going to be like 2.5 times as big.
Right,
but that, okay. And that's possibly a little bit more than that, because considering that our staff room and our, you know, the joint facilities between the staff of the service centre and the library will be shared, so you can sort of take, you know, you could add that to the equation that we would normally need on our own.
Right.
So, yeah, it is, it'll be a lot bigger.
Okay.
Yeah, which we're looking forward to, of course.
Lovely. Well, I think the great thing about libraries is it's really where the taxpayer, that and parks and playgrounds, it's really where the taxpayer sees their money being put to really...
Yeah, and it's a real positive experience for everybody that comes along.
Yeah.
You know, all ages of the community. And we have, I think, just over 50% of our community on Waiheke using the library.
Wow. Is that high?
Yeah, it's pretty... it's good for Auckland City because other areas are lower than that. So we do quite well over here, which is nice.
Yeah. Okay, well, lovely.
Okay.
So tell us what you've got then. What's up this month? Anything interesting?
Okay, so just to recap
Sorry.
Market today, 10 to 12, if you want to go and have a talk to the people down there. The maps, you know, like the concept plans will blow it up and you can see it. And or come and pick up a form from the library and fill it out and either post it in or drop it back to us.
Yeah, okay.
So
lovely. Good.
Hot topic.
Yes. People are talking a lot about aren't they?
When
they're busy not talking about the mining and the lack of water.
So there you go.
Okay, great. So what have we got then?
So we've got coming up May, which the library gets fully involved with New Zealand Music Month, and your radio station podcasts every show, so that's really cool, and all the musicians have agreed to be podcasted, so that's
so who have we got? Do you know some of the names? Or?
Yeah, because I'm the one that organised it all. So we have Sister Shout, the quartet.
Great.
The quartet.
What, in the library?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. We've got Chocolate Fish, who are going to be previewing their new CD with us.
Oh, fab.
So, and I think they're going to be on the stage. We're going to use a stage outside a bit this year, so hopefully the weather will be nice to us. So they're first up on the 1st of May. So come along to that one. And then we've got an eclectic kind of variety show on the last Saturday. That's Mr. Whittaker on a dulcetone.
Oh, okay.
And we've got Marla on...
What is a dulcetone? Can
exactly.
You
I had to go and say, would you just tell me which of these instruments is a dulcetone? It's a little piano. So he can actually kind of carry it down to the library and play it.
Is it an old style piano?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's Marla, who's going to be playing a psaltery, and I'd never heard of that. I'd heard of dulcetone, but I'd never heard of the word psaltery, and it's psaltery. And the psaltery is something that you play on your knee. It's kind of a harp thing.
Okay.
And you can pluck it or you can use it like a violin, you know, having a bow, and Marla's has a bow.
Right, and where's that instrument from originally?
I have no idea.
Right.
No, sorry,
okay.
Don't know. And then we've got Andy Lewis, who will be playing his Regal mandolin.
Oh,
so that's three.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So those three are all playing together, you know, not together, but as
on the
a
same day.
Little variety show. Okay, so we also have the Waiheke High School Choral Singers.
Wow.
And so that'll be fantastic having them along. Sarah McNabb, the teacher there, they've been in training with her for quite some time, and she's a voice specialist, so really looking forward to that group coming along as well. So every Saturday in May at 11 o'clock, free performances come along. It is getting to be known as quite an annual event.
So is that 11 till 12?
Usually half an hour, but some people have commented to have a bit longer this year, so it doesn't really matter, but half an hour's minimum,
right.
Maybe longer. So put that in your diaries it will be in the newspaper as well.
Yeah. Well, that sounds fabulous, and especially if you can use the stage, it's kind of like the library extending out into another space, which is quite lovely as well.
We'll just cross our fingers for the weather.
Yeah.
We've had so little rain, it might rain every all of May.
No.
We don't quite want that. Okay, so it's also the time for New Zealand Book New Zealand Post Book Awards. This is the time of the year for this as well. All the finalists have been chosen. Everyone's been encouraged to read the finalists. And mid-May, the winners are announced. So I just wanted to mention three of the picture books, which I think some parents would have already, you know, probably had them out. One is Piggity Wiggity Jig Goes to Dad's Cafe. And that was a finalist a couple of years ago as well, you know, different, same, you know,
series.
Author. Oh, sorry, the same character in the book, Piggity Wiggity. And this time Dad goes to the cafe. So that one, that's really delightful, that one. The Wonky Donkey's fabulous. We've been using it at our story times. It's got such an awesome ring to the whole book, and there's a CD in the back, so you can play the CD while you read the story with your children. So that's a really gorgeous story. And then, of course, we can't miss out Margaret Mahey. She's in the finalists again this year, and she's written a book called The Word Witch. And it's a collection of all of her poems and poetry and haikus and rhymes, and fabulously illustrated by a guy called David Elliott.
Is that a children's thing or
Yeah, actually, I've been having a wee look at it, and it's both. It's for everybody, and there's some quite, you know, more adult ones, and there's some kids ones, and but it's just, it's one of those things that I think you could, you know, it's one of those ones you buy, because it's there for everybody in the family to pass down, to always be able to pick up and read another poem. It's quite a thick book. It's not just your normal sized little picture book. So you borrow that, of course, from our library as well, and delight in that. So I don't know who's going to be the winner, but, you know, we find out mid-May. But we have all of the finalists available in the library, so do either order them online or come in and ask for a copy of one, and all the kids can read them, and they're allowed to vote online, which is the kids' favourite. So you can do some online stuff as well, and they actually have this year a creative writing competition for children, and that's online as well, newzealandpostbookawards.co.nz. So, like, encourage your kids to, you know, right, because the prizes are fabulous.
Great. Are there age groups for that?
There's just one age group, I think, actually. I've had a wee look at the website. I think it is just the one age group. I'm not sure. Okay. But if you win, if you're one of the 50 people chosen throughout New Zealand, you get a $50 book voucher and you get to be published. They're going to officially publish it.
Oh, how sweet. So there's going to be some sort of book collection.
Yeah,
with the
top
50.
And officially, like, professionally illustrated and bound and published.
Oh, sounds fun. Okay, well,
get writing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Di, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. So don't forget, you've still got until when for the library upgrade submission?
Yes, the forms are available and need to be in by next Wednesday.
Right, okay. And also, if you're out and about, get over to Ostend Markets by 12 to be able to talk to some of the people who are key decision makers in that whole process and find out more. And I'm sure the librarians, if they've got a spare moment, might have.
Yeah, all we can really say is what we see the library to be, and what we know our customers are fed back to us, you know, which is like I said before, the book library and needing a bit more space and that kind of thing.
And are there particular age groups that use it more or not particularly?
There's a wide cross section.
Lovely.
From the babies to the oldies.
Yeah. Oh, well, great. Okay. Right. So thanks very much, Di.
Thank you, Sharon.
Bye.
Bye.
Now I've got Alan Wilson with me. He's with the Waiheke Fishing and Recreational Club.
Good morning, Sharon.
So tell us, what do you guys do?
Okay, basically, to give you a little bit of a history of the club, we've been operating on the island now for probably 9 years. It was the brainchild of a group of guys that got together one evening, probably around Alina, I would imagine. And one of the key figures in that group was a man named Colin Vaughan. Colin unfortunately passed away last year, but he was instrumental in basically getting the club up and running as an official club. He was able to secure us some funding through the Lotteries Commission, and basically we set up a committee and got the club rolling.
Lovely. Great. And so what is it that you guys do?
Well, basically fishing. The club, we've got at the moment probably 90 members We have a monthly fishing competition on a Sunday, which fishing starts at 5 in the morning, and we start our weigh-in at the reserve where the Sea Scouts Hall is at the end of Shelley Beach Road. And weigh-in starts at 1 o'clock and finishes at 2, and then we have a prize giving. All our monthly competitions, we have cash prizes. Top prize, say, 1 month will be $300 for the heaviest snapper, and we alternate that to make it fair on all our participants. The following month, it will be $300 for the average weight snapper. We also have $150 for the average weight, $100 for a lucky weight, and we also have a mystery prize. So, and generally, we would have 50 competitors at a monthly fishing comp.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay, so what does it cost? How does one become a member?
Okay, to become a member is very simple. You can get in touch with me. I'm on 372-6844. Or if you were to go and see Steve Morgan at Offshore Marine in Tahi Road, possibly Paul Delator at Erua Fishing Supplies, you simply fill out a form and pay $40 and you're basically guaranteed your membership. Becoming a member, our monthly competitions cost you $20, and if you're a non-member, and we welcome all non-members to come in our comps, cost you $30.
Oh, okay, lovely, good. So what advantages are there in being a member? What other kinds of things do you do?
Well, there's not, apart from the financially, it's cheaper to come into a competition. As I say, we have a monthly competition. We don't have any other meetings apart from that. We do help out with the Onitangi beach races. We help out with the King of the Bay fishing comp. Our guys go down there and fillet fish for people that buy their fish in the auction after the prize giving. We have an annual Take a Kid fishing competition at Maatiatia Wharf, which just seems to grow and grow and grow. This year we had 124 kids on the wharf.
Wow. Did anyone catch anything?
With mums and dads. Well, yeah, they catch a lot of sprats, a lot of yellowtail, the
old
mullet,
and oysters,
the odd karwai. Every kid that takes part in this competition gets a prize, single one of them, and that is through the generosity of Video Easy, that is our major sponsor for that competition. So every kid will go home with either a Video Easy voucher or a chocolate bar, and they all get a chocolate milk drink.
Oh, okay. Mm. Oh, well, that sounds fabulous. Mm. And so tell us about... you know, you've been fishing on the island quite a long time.
Well, I've been on the island for 14 years, and I'm fishing nut like the rest of our members are. I was a foundation member of the fishing club. So basically, every monthly comp, I like to try and get out there if I can. I've got three sons that are, well, especially two of them that are absolutely mad on fishing, and it's just a healthy sport, and it's good to have people, kids especially. I've seen so many kids with my working life sitting inside on a hot sunny day playing video games, and as far as I'm concerned, if you live on an island, they must be standing on a rock throwing a line in the water trying to catch something.
Too right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, some people reckon that fishing is better than it used to be. Other people think it's worse than it used to be. What's your feeling on that? Are there any changes?
My personal feeling on it is, with the time that I've been on Waiheke, I honestly believe that the fishing has improved due to the quota system that the government has set up. And I believe over the years, your chances of going and catching a fish to have a feed have multiplied many times.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's my personal view.
Right. Yeah. Okay, and so... How big are the fish that you can catch? Because you've got some of your own quotas as part of the fishing club.
Yes,
what's
well,
that all about?
Our club basically started up a few years ago, whereas anyone can go out and their limit for snapper is 9 snapper. With our competitions, we only allow people to weigh in 3 of each species. And your, say, minimum size for a snapper is 27 centimetres. Our minimum size to weigh in a snapper at a comp is 30 centimetres. And we basically call this fishing for the future. We don't need to be going out and catching 9 snapper every time we go out. And so, yeah, it's basically so our kids and our grandkids We'll have fish to catch as well.
Okay. So the fish from your monthly competitions, you see, I love fish and I don't like buying fish at the supermarket. Do you sell that fish in the way that King of the Bay fish is sold or not? Like, can I come along at the end there and score myself a bit of snapper?
Well, yeah, possibly if you know one of the members. We don't sell our fish. It's illegal to sell your fish. We would have to get a special license, like Rotary for the King of the Bay. They get a license to auction the fish off.
Oh, right.
But no, we don't do that. But if you became a member and came down to a weigh-in, you might be lucky enough to find someone that has got a few more fish than they need and maybe pass one on to you.
Oh, okay, so you could have a special membership called Friends of the Fishing Club.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
I'd like to be Friends of the Fishing Club.
We have a big fishing competition, which we call Fish the Rock. Which we just had in February, which we have the weigh-in down at Matiatia, and $1,000 for the heavier snapper, $2,000 for average weight snapper, loads and loads of other prizes. We have a very good following from our club members, especially members that are self-employed or in business. We get good sponsorship. So not many people leave that competition without a prize. And I also got to put a plug in for our major sponsors for that comp, which is DB Breweries and The Barn Super Liquor.
Great.
And the fish from that, we actually ask our members or competitors to donate any fish that they really don't need themselves, and that fish we fill it up and we give to Seaside Sanctuary.
Old
people, and just give it away and give them a feed of fresh fish once a year.
Great.
So yeah, no, we're a very, very community based club, and we have high standards, high ideals about looking after our fishing, our assets, and very, very family friendly.
No, it sounds lovely. Now, can I just ask you, because there are people say that we've almost fished out the tuna completely. That things like orange roughy that take 30 years to reach sexual maturity are being fished and stuck in the supermarket. Do you have any feelings around commercial fishing?
Well, I'm not really up to the play with commercial fishing. I only know as much as what you can read in the papers and see on TV. I believe that our commercial fishing, because of our quota system, is being quite well managed. I think you would find that it's more other countries that are raping and pillaging the stocks. But we have our own areas in New Zealand, as far as I know, that we fish the orange roughy and what have you. And so I think as far as the country goes, we are we're leading the world in keeping our reserves for future generations. Yeah.
Okay. And any thoughts on what's been going on with the whaling? Have you been following that story?
Well, once again, only what you see in the papers. Like most people, I am anti-whaling. We're up against a very strong group of nations, namely Japan, I guess, that it's going to take a lot to be able to stop them from whaling. Yeah, politically. Japan is such a strong economic country. Little countries like us don't really want to step on their toes, but we do have our standards and our beliefs, and I think that we are showing the world as much as we can our opposition to whaling.
And I understand there's now a New Zealander sitting in a Japanese jail waiting for some rescuing from someone.
Yes, well, once again,
hopefully the New Zealand government, if they come to the table.
I don't think the New Zealand government want to play ball, exactly for the reasons I was talking about before, is we do not want to upset these big nations. Mind you, on saying that, we took on the states with anti-nuclear, and we're still anti-nuclear, and so you never know what's in the future.
That's right. And we should definitely hold on to that. I noticed that I'm quite cynical about these things, and I tend to think that the Americans are making a bit more of an effort with New Zealand, specifically because we've got an anti-nuclear policy that they might like to play around with.
Well, I think with what's being in the news in the last week with President Obama, maybe it's becoming in vogue to be anti-nuclear.
Yeah, well, I hope so. God. About time. Okay, right. So just a last question then. So do women make better fisher people than guys?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because this year we started a competition, which was one of our monthly competitions, and we basically made it a teams competition, and you had to have a female in your team.
Female human or female anything?
Well, preferably female human, but anyway, whatever turns you on, I suppose. But it was a very successful competition, and the girls came along and they thoroughly enjoyed it. And to be honest with you, I think ladies might be a little bit more patient than men. And as far as fishing goes, a lot of patience is a big asset. So, yeah.
Right.
And we're going to try and, build on that. As I say, we've got an AGM tomorrow, and I need to put a plug in here for our AGM, because if there's any members out there listening, we are going to have probably 6 or 7 of our long-standing committee members retiring this year. And these people have been around for about 8 years now, and they've done an absolute sterling job in keeping the club running and building our membership and building our assets. We have our own marquee. We have sausage and bread sizzle, free sausage and bread sizzle at every prize giving. And these guys have just worked tirelessly for our club. And so to all the other members, you need to sit down and think whether you have got something to offer the club tomorrow at AGM, because we're going to need to fill these spots. Otherwise, it's going to make it very hard on a very few people.
Mm. Well, look, it sounds like a lovely club, and I haven't come across you guys before, but best of luck with that. Can you just do a little plug again for tomorrow's competition? You might get some new members showing up and possibly interested in staying for the AGM and taking part.
Sure, okay. Well, to start with, if you want to participate in the competition tomorrow and you're not a member, or even if you are a member, you can get tickets at from Steve at Offshore Marine, at Paul Erua Fishing Supplies, the barber shop down on Onitangi Strait, Brenda and Dave down there will give you a ticket. And also, if you wanted to call into Hamill's Fishing in Onirua, they'll have tickets as well. Non-members, $30 a ticket. As I say, we have 4 money prizes to be won. And fishing starts at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, and weigh-in begins at 1 o'clock at the Sea Scouts Hall, the little reserve there at the end of Shelley Beach Road, and finishes at 2 o'clock. And we have normally finished our prize giving by 2:30, so you've still got lots of time in the afternoon to go home and do those chores that you should have been doing in the morning. And we welcome new members, so please come along. I mean, like yourself, a lot of people, we've been going for 10 years now, a lot of people don't even know we exist. So, yeah, come along, get involved. We're a good family-friendly club, and love to see you there. New members, come along.
Well, it sounds lovely. So I've been talking to Alan Wilson. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And he's from the Waiheke Fishing and Recreational Club. Thanks, Alan.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues. Brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Onirua.
I am with Tony King Turner, who's a in a past life and still now sometimes a hydro engineer. Tony, do you need to put these things on so you can actually hear what's going on and talk? And hi, how's it going? You actually need to talk into the mic and get right up close to it. Good. So Tony's going to be talking about the water situation on the island. So it's quite unusual this year, because lots of people have actually started ordering water. Is that right?
Yeah, we're actually seeing impact of climate change, I guess you could call it, at the moment. It is, whether or not you want to think it's man-made or not, it's really irrelevant. We are actually undergoing considerable climate change throughout parts of New Zealand. This is the worst drought in 60 years, we're told, and the impact of that has been a huge uptake on groundwater, because so many people are running out of water.
Right, and so where is this groundwater coming from?
Okay, the groundwater is its source is from the sky, from up above, then it makes its way down on to the land surface, and a certain proportion of it will run across the land surface if the ground's saturated, and ultimately into the sea. Provided the ground's saturated, there'll be a portion of water which will make its way down into the ground through the topsoil, the clay, the weathered rock, and then into the rock. And our rock here on Waiheke is around about Jurassic age, so So it's fairly old, and it's very fractured and contorted, and you can see that if you go up to the quarry. There's often big tension cracks throughout the rock mass, and it's within those cracks that the water is stored and slowly makes its way through the rock mass to the sea. So our aquifer within Waiheke it's not just in like big streams or underground streams or whatever, it's actually within the shattered rock. So yeah, it takes time for that water to actually run through the rock mass and make its way out. And at the moment I would say we're definitely taking out far more than what is being recharged or replenished by rainwater.
So how much water is down there? I mean, if everyone takes water, what does that mean for the aquifer? I mean, how much water
I don't
can
know
take?
How much water is there. I don't think anybody knows that. It's there's an awful lot of unknowns here, a lot of uncertainty. But I guess we'll find out as bores go dry, as they have gone dry in the past. There's also a risk of salination of water source if you bore really close to the sea. And I know of a bore, for example, at Matiatia that went saline. So, yeah, it's a problem, and it's an increasing problem on the island with the number of bores that are going down. Like, for example, in Church Bay, there used to be just 4 bores, which were mainly for the new subdivision. And now, well, there's one for Mudbrick, one for Cable Bay, one for several other developments around the place, and they're all, trying to make a go of what they're doing, but in the process, an awful lot of water is being used. So I think it's time, we really need to think carefully about how we're going to conserve this water, because it's a finite resource.
Right. Okay. So if people are taking, these vineyards who are taking water out of the bore, how is that controlled?
The Auckland Regional Council have, provided it's a legal bore, they'll have, they'll have meter readers there so they can control exactly how much water, or know at least how much water is coming out of the ground, and those bores will also have a limit on how much they can take per year. I'm not sure how that works with the commercial bores, because I don't think it goes down too well if a water carrier says, well, sorry, we can't give you any water because we're past our limit allowed by the ARC. I mean, I think in an emergency situation, it's inevitable that people are going to need water, so it's sucked out of the ground and given to them.
Mm. So how long does it take, it's hard to know this, but how long does it take for water that lands on the surface of the earth to get into the groundwater aquifer? Is there some sort of measure of that?
You can do it by isotope reading of the water to some degree, but the thing is it all gets mixed up, so you get water of different ages. It's only in places like, for example, we've got water caverns within, say, limestone country, then you can actually age that water. For example, in Northwest Nelson, you've got the Takaka Ranges and also the Tasman Ranges, and that's Takaka Marble, and there's great underground streams through that, and that then can be aged, but it's pretty difficult here. In fact, it's really impossible.
But what kind of estimate are we saying? Like, it's a year? Are we saying it's 6 months? Are we saying it's 100 years? Like, how long does it take to get water down there?
We don't know.
No idea at all.
No.
Okay. So that would then suggest that it's obviously quite a precious commodity, which we probably all realise. So what is the solution to the fact that we're on, rainwater, and if we run out, we're going to need to, get more water?
I think one real easy solution is to make sure all new houses have 10,000 gallons water storage. 10,000 gallon tanks, preferably concrete. And the other option would be also any house that changes hands, in other words, is sold, that would be upgraded to a 10,000 gallon tank. It's a pretty simple measure. Okay, it costs maybe $5,000, but long term it's got to be good for the island, because we can't keep, if we have more of these extreme weather events like we're having now, there's a high risk of problems with water extraction. you can't keep on taking water indefinitely like we have been, especially if droughts, you know, like these. This is the worst, as I say, in 60 years, so who knows what's around the corner.
Mm. Okay, and other solutions? One solution is obviously to put in a second water tank, which seems like a really obvious solution, but a really good one.
Yeah, well, the other thing is composting toilets. I was always a bit dubious about composting toilets until I had one put in recently in a sleep out I've got, and I just can't believe what a simple, straightforward solution. You know, it's so easy if it's designed properly. So, I mean, that's another one. Going back to header tanks rather than pressure pumps, like header tanks use a whole lot less water. So, and other water-saving devices like...
Why do header tanks use less water than...
Because they're under less pressure. And the higher the pressure, the more water is extracted from the tank.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I was talking to one of the water guys recently, and he said the best thing that ever happened for us is high-pressure pumps. People will use more water, and that's the reality of the situation. What else? Oh, yeah, roading. There's a type of roading design called low-impact design, whereby water runoff makes its way direct to the ground rather than through curbing and channelling and stormwater pipes. So that way the ground's getting hydrated. In other words, water's being released onto the ground, and then there's an opportunity, if the situation's right, for that water to help recharge the aquifer. We see an awful lot of huge, expensive roadworks going on the island, and none of them are actually using low-impact design, which is now being used around the world, increasingly so. So it's a simple way of dealing with roading, and it's a great way of getting water back into the ground, and it's cheaper.
Mm.
No curbing and channelling, cutting out stormwater pipes. It's a much better way to go. And ironically, a lot of the old roads, or older roads on the island, not the main road, have no curbing and channelling, and it's a perfect example of what they're doing now throughout Europe and other areas in the world, whereby curbing and channelling is off the menu.
Mm. So, well, that does sound like a tired old mantra. I mean, it's not like the council haven't been told, is it? I mean, as far as I can tell, anyone who knows anything about roads, water, living on Waiheke has been going on about curbing and channelling for quite a few years now. So is that situation likely to get worse, or can it get any worse, I mean, with council-controlled organisations? Or is it already that nobody's really paying any attention anyway?
Yeah, it's kind of... they've certainly been told enough. I guess for a lot of roading engineers, it's quite hard for them to get their head around doing something which is quite radically different to what they think. And often they come from an engineering background and not so much from a looking at the whole situation, like what trees are around, where the wetlands are, the shape of the road and so on, you know. But really, good design takes all those factors into account, and the result's a whole lot better for the environment.
Mm. So, can you explain, there was something on the news the other day, or something I saw on television, and it was talking about how it's going to take 2 or 3 months for the land to become saturated once it starts raining, and for some reason that was important.
Yeah, well, you can, like, it's just if you go out and water your garden, and if you just stand out there for a few minutes and sprinkle water around, and then turn the hose off, and then go and have a scratch in the garden, and you'll see there'll be a nice little wet layer on top, and it'll be perfectly dry underneath. So you like to have runoff from the earth into, say, reservoirs, that'll only happen once that ground's saturated. So in other words, the water will just keep on percolating into the ground, and then once the whole thing's saturated, then water runoff can occur, and the ground becomes hydrated.
Mm. Okay, right. So that's a process. So even though it starts raining, that water's not available for
replenishing aquifers too. And, I mean, this whole water thing is a massive thing around the world. You know, I just noticed the latest National Geographic has got a full thing on water. The whole article is on, or the whole book is on water, and it's around the world what's going on, and also the listener. We've got big problems in this country now with probably the biggest change in land use that there's been since the trees were first of all cut down for logging and later on for farming, and that is the conversion into dairying. And dairying is a dirty industry and it uses colossal amounts of water. I was recently...
Sorry, the phone's ringing and I'm just going to have to put a track on because for some reason it's... Okay, well, I'm back here with Tony King Turner. I'm sorry about that. When the phone rings, it starts buzzing, and I can't tell whether the you know listeners can hear it, so that's why I switched us off quickly. So I should correct that. Tony is a geologist with an interest in water, and he's talking to us about the effects of water. The issues with water around the world. So you were just talking about a National Geographic article.
Yeah, the latest one that's not in the shops yet, but it's looking at water issues throughout the world. One of the big ones that I'm really interested in is the area of the Himalayas. I went there first in 1981 and worked up near Everest Base Camp and I always had a passion for glaciers, so... I got to know the Khumbu Glacier pretty well, and also spent some time with glaciologists who were doing work up there, trying to work out what was going on with the glaciers, because there's very little research been done. Then I went back in 20 years later, 2001, and I was shocked to see how much those glaciers had, or the main Khumbu Glacier, one of the biggest in the world, how much it had retreated. And I then got to realise that this water from these glaciers feeds an incredible amount of people. That the Himalaya, they also call it the third pole, North Pole, South Pole, and the Himalayas is the biggest mass of ice outside of those two poles, and they supply water. In other words, when it snows up high, it falls onto the very headwaters of the glacier, it compacts and ultimately makes its way down as a big river of ice. When it gets to lower altitudes, that water melts and creates rivers or streams and rivers and so on out to sea. The water from the Himalayas feeds a third of the world's population. That's India, China, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Burma, Thailand, Vietnam. So it's quite scary when you think how fast these glaciers are retreating, and they're retreating really rapidly. And now in places like Ladakh, which is up near Kashmir, they're having major water problems now. People are having to move. Even around the world, you go from the Himalayas and go over to the Andes, up in La Paz in Bolivia. They're now having major water shortages, and they may even have to abandon the city. So it's kind of a wake-up call, really, for the world, in that water is the one thing that we simply cannot live without, and suddenly we've got this high risk of billions of people being without water, and it's already happening, and it will continue as the glaciers retreat, and as the water, at the moment we're getting a lot of flooding because the glaciers are melting really fast, so there'll be a time when that water runs out, and it's not a great scenario to think about.
Well, that sounds really cheerful. On the bright side, on Waiheke, you can do something about your water consumption, because obviously, you know, it's critical here too. If we go into several years of drought, we can't all keep draining the aquifer, so we're going to have to be a lot more careful about how we use the water. And just having access to a bore, being able to pay for water, isn't necessarily the solution. So it seems to be a thing of... you know, regulating consumption and being really careful with it. So anyway, so those are some ideas of things that you can do. Avoid high pressure pumps and shower heads. I think my landlord's put bricks in my cistern so that when I flush the toilet, it flushes even less than a half a tank. And play a bit more music, and then Tony's going to talk to us about the mining. it seems like a lot of Waiheke and Great Barrier are going to be crying if we get this mining through. So it'd be interesting to know if that's all a bit of a red herring or if there really is a problem with the mining. But in any case, Greenpeace are organising a big demo and lots of people are up in arms. So, Tony, what do you have any opinions on mining grade 4 conservation land on Great Barrier?
Yeah, I have a problem with mining in a lot of parts of New Zealand where there's high rainfall, especially gold mining. Because gold, where they want to mine over in Great Barrier is, you know, it's quite a high rainfall area. It's also quite stunning. The White Cliffs area, I've got a big piece of rock from White Cliffs on my deck, you know, and I often admire it. And, yeah, it's a superb piece of landscape, but to actually get in there and mine it, whether they do it open cast or not, is really destructive of the environment. First of all, to do it, you would most likely have to build a reasonable power plant to keep the mine going. You've got to crush this, you know, you've got to first of all get the ore, then you've got to crush it. And from, it takes, I don't know, I can't really remember, but it takes a phenomenal amount of rock to just get an ounce of gold. And this is not alluvial gold over there, it's gold within reefs.
Sorry, can you just tell us what the difference is there?
Oh, alluvial gold is gold that's been over millions, sometimes thousands of years. The rock has been weathered and eroded and ultimately made its way down onto alluvial flats in the form of gravel and sand, and then miners come in and they can dig that up either manually or with a dredge or whatever, and then, like, for example, on the West Coast, mining was done like that on those sort of conditions, and gold's extracted, whereas over at White Cliffs on Great Barrier, that gold there is within the rock, so the rock has to be dug up, crushed, and undergo a pretty nasty process using mercury. And arsenic is often released, and sulfides released from the rock as soon as it becomes open to the weather. So you've got really nasty runoff. And White Cliffs is not that far from the sea, so it'll have an impact on the rivers through the area and certainly with the sea.
Right, okay. And also, aside from the damage caused by making a huge hole or underground digging or whatever, I understand the extraction process needs heaps of cyanide, is that right?
Yeah.
And then you get, in some places, you get like cyanide dammed lakes. Sounds
yeah,
revolting.
Yeah, they have to, these days they have to store the rock and the liquid in tailing dams. The problem is in high rainfall areas, those dams can burst or leak, and it's pretty nasty stuff.
And I think the other interesting thing is, okay, so you've got amazing conservation area stuff that's you know, attracting tourists, both locals and from overseas. And then you've got the mining, which has a dubious amount of revenue going to the government and causes huge environmental fallout. So it just seems like a very strange proposition.
Yeah, this is when I first read about it, I had to check the date of the paper because I thought, God, is it April Fool's or what? Because it just seems like such a dumb idea, being so close to Auckland and Great Barrier being, you know, part of Auckland's playground. But to be doing, it's just, well, like crapping in your own nest, really. And I thought maybe they just want to lose, maybe Key and Co want to lose the election or something, because, I mean, it's a great way to do it.
Well, do you think it's a bit of a red herring? Because I understand that Nikki Kaye has sort of come out against mining. Is that just a ploy for the national government to sort of turn around and say, oh, no, you know, of course we're listening to the people and we're not going to mine here? Or do you think there's a real threat that in spite of the Hauraki Park Marine Act, etc., etc., and the fact that it's important conservation land, they'll still potentially go and mine it?
I don't think they'll mine it because it would be political suicide. I think what they'll do, what the national government will do, is say, okay, we've listened to the people and we're not going to do that one, and aren't we good? Mm. Please give us your votes. I think Nikki Kaye's really gutsy to do that and to come out against her political accomplices was a pretty strong thing on her part. She's got a real strong affinity for Great Barrier and for the whole Gulf. So good on her. And Jerry Brownlee and co, I mean, I just I can't work them out. It just seems nuts.
Okay, great. So Greenpeace are quite actively organising stuff against the mining. So there's a march against mining, which will be on the 2nd of the... it's either the 1st or the 2nd. I think it's the 2nd of May in... Oh, sorry. Sorry about that. The 1st of May in Auckland. The march starts at 11. You can also get involved in other ways. It's a march up Queen Street, 5 to 8 every Tuesday and Thursday. They're giving free pizza to people who want to come to the organisational caller meetings at the Greenpeace office in Mount Eden. You can also order flyers and stick them around. A3 and A4 flyers, and you can get those from emailing climate.intern.nz@greenpeace.org or just finding the number and giving them a ring. They're also banner painting all of this week and next week, so it should be a fun demo if you happen to be in town. I know it's a bit of a drag to go from Waiheke. On the other hand, it's quite a big issue, so it's important to let the government know how we feel, and I'm sure the emails and phone calls to members of parliament can't hurt. Okay, well, great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So you've been listening to Tony King Turner talk about water and the mining issues.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12. And the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.